Welcome to the Distance to Empty podcast, the podcast where 200-mile ultramarathons are our singular personality trait. I'm your host, Kevin Goldberg, and I'm here with my co-host, Peter Noyes. Peter, how are you doing?
Doing really well. Had a bit of a rough start to the year, but now I realize Leadville is like 4 months away. So as of this week, new month, April, I am focused and I am back on track.
You are so back.
Feeling pretty good about that. How about you, Kevin?
I'm good. You know, in the thick of Cocodona training here and ready for taper, ready for the race, and just, you know, looking forward to it being here sooner than we know. Have some pretty exciting news today. We have a sponsor for the podcast.
Exciting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're doing this thing for fun, but if we can get some free gear and maybe some money out of it, hey, we'll do it, right?
Yeah, why not?
So the sponsor actually came out of, you know, I wasn't looking for sponsors per se, but what I have been looking for is like the perfect sun shirt, because I like running in sun shirts. I have a few that I like, but none that I like really like yet. So I actually ordered something from this company and paid for it before even, you know, entertaining the idea of reaching out to them to see if they wanted to sponsor the podcast. So the company is called Kettle Mountain Apparel, and they make a variety of kind of like everyday wear and active wear. And the shirt that I bought was the No Fry sun shirt. They have it in short sleeve, long sleeve, and kind of like a sun hoodie. And it's just really good. Like, it's a great material. You know, typically I run in like John G or Rabbit gear, and this is, in my opinion, much more comfortable and much nicer than those. And it's kind of more affordable too. So they sent us some more gear to review that we haven't gotten yet. So we'll follow up with that. But in the meantime, if you guys are interested in trying it out, I really think the No Fry shirt is kind of a game changer for trail running. We're going to put a link in the show notes. And basically, if you use that link to shop, we get 20%. So if you want to help out the podcast, help out us, and get yourself a pretty sweet piece of gear, go check it out. We'd appreciate it. If not, that's cool too. We like all gear companies. So cool. Well, let's dive into our guest today. What do you think, Peter?
Yeah, really excited about this guest. So we're going to be talking about the Speed Project, which I'm really excited to learn more about since it's in my backyard. And this guest literally just finished this race, so we'll see how this goes. But without further ado, we'll get into the Speed Project with Evan Birch.
Hey, Evan, good morning. Thanks for joining us on Distance to Empty.
Yeah, morning, Kevin, Peter. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So I'm really stoked to jump into the Speed Project today, which you are literally just coming off of, like having finished a few days ago. So if you're anything like me, you're probably still in a bit of a brain fog from running for days on end and kind of have that 200 plus mile stupor. But before we get into this race and what it is, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what led you to the sport, and kind of what got you to where you're sitting at today?
Yeah, so ultra running was definitely not, you know, top of my list for sports to kind of get into. I have been trail running for about 20 years, shorter distances, 5, 10Ks, you know, local organizations that put on kind of like entry-level races. Played soccer my whole life fairly competitively up until age 30. And then I decided that I wanted to do something that wasn't a team sport. And I threw myself into a bunch of off-road triathlons. So they're called Xterra events. So open water swim, mountain bike, trail run. And I realized that swimming was not something I enjoyed at all. My legs sunk and I was always back of the pack. Hated it, super competitive, and when you're at the back of the pack all the time, you just kind of question whether or not you should be there. And I was always kind of top of the tier on the run legs, and I just decided, you know, there's something in it for me in that realm. And I started doing some slightly longer trail runs, kind of half marathon trail runs, and then I got up to like a 30K, and then I did a 45K stage race. And then I went up to 60K, and that would have been in 2019. And ever since then, I haven't stopped increasing the distances since then. So,
and you did your first 200 last year at the Divide. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, Divide 200, the inaugural one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We had the race director, Brian, from the Divide on here, and that race just sounds absolutely epic. You're going back again this year?
I am planning to go back this year, yes. Yeah. And want a second crack at it to see what, obviously, first year race course, you understand things a little bit differently. Obviously, it's kind of my training area. I live in Alberta, so it's only 2.5 hours south of me to get to that training ground. So I'm definitely going to be on those trails training this spring, summer, just to get a little bit of better sense of how I can tackle that race a little bit differently.
So, you know, you've been very open about your struggles with mental health, kind of paralleling your journey through ultra running. So can you talk to us a little bit about the moment where you realized that running was more than just a physical challenge for you, and sort of the impact of your career working in emergency dispatch on your mental health, and how kind of running and ultra running came into the picture, and you know, where all that fits within your story?
Yeah, for sure. So just for quick background, so I have been in emergency services for about 20 years between fire, EMS, air ambulance dispatch. So hearing the first calls, the first everything from anybody who's obviously struggling with something. So hearing that first reaction for pretty much 20 years of your career can be taxing on the body and the mind. And, you know, unbeknownst to me, I handled it quite well in the moments and in the experiences. It was when I was taken outside of it for a period of time and then I went back into it that things really hit for me pretty hard. And I didn't realize that my struggles with the career actually coincided exactly with me increasing distances. I didn't realize that until I actually went and sought help and asked for the help and, you know, went through therapy and started other modalities. And, you know, as you tie things together, you start to understand, like, well, why did I push those further distances? And it was definitely unconscious to me, but it definitely explains why I was enjoying it so much, because it was an escape. It was an avoidance. It was allowing me to run away from the things that I wasn't willing to yet deal with or face head on. And so that was kind of the bigger struggle for me. It was realizing that, you know, I can't do this alone. And that's when I ended up turning and asking for help and had to really kind of get real with myself as to, you know, am I running for the right reasons? And do I even want to keep doing this? Is this healthy for me? It's very easy to fall into an addiction aspect of the ultra running world and, you know, go after the miles and just constantly train and avoid. So it was definitely something I had to rethink and decide whether or not this is something I wanted to do for me and not to avoid anymore.
So how did your relationship change? Or like, what are the tips or tactics that you work through to get a healthier relationship with running?
Yeah, the best way I can describe it is I was running at the time before I knew why I was doing it. I was running from a place of wounding. So like hating myself and like understanding like, why can't I do this job anymore? And, you know, what am I doing to myself? You know, swapping pain for pain, realistically, if I were to, you know, put it together. And really, I had to flip it on its head and go, you know, I don't want to run from a place of wounding anymore. I want to run from a place of worth, like self-love, joy, the actual like enjoyment of what I get from this, not what I'm actually running from. So I've been last year, I had a really good friend of mine, a videographer friend, Dylan Leader, who's done a lot of my photography and everything in the mountains for my running. And he came to me and asked if, you know, we should maybe work on a project on a documentary about my journey, at least the initial part. So that's going to be coming out in the next few months here. And it's really about, you know, running towards now and not running away. And that's really the big thing for me, is coming from that place of enjoyment and not, you know, thinking that I need to enter the pain cave and hurt myself to make myself feel better.
Yeah, we've talked about that message a bit on this podcast with other guests too. Like, it's, you know, the mentality that gets like the attention on social media is like that Goggins, you know, like, you know, stay hard, who's going to carry the boats kind of thing. And it's like, I don't know, I personally find that the longer you go and the harder the things you do are, the more that doesn't work or isn't healthy. And the, you know, the the more appropriate thing to do is to try to find that joy, like be compassionate with yourself. Like you're already doing, you know, the hardest thing you could find. That's how you got here. And that's what you chose to do. So like just being kind to yourself and like, you know, finding, like you said, running towards it and embracing it rather than like punishing yourself. You're already being punished. Why double down? Right.
Yeah. I'm definitely not, I don't attest to the statement of like a suffer fast or anything like that. I think there's, you know, the certain criteria that I have for whether or not I continue in a race or I don't. You know, there's a difference between choosing to quit and not being able to continue. And I think there's, you know, I don't think everybody coming into this, there's so many unknowns, especially once you get into that 200 mile plus distance. Nobody knows what they're doing. Like, I'll be honest, like there's still so much untapped research and knowledge, whether it's around sleep, nutrition, mental, whatever it is. There's so much to learn from that. And these longer distances, I think, allow you to have that time to, you know, for me, I'm a big problem solver. I love solving problems. That's probably why I love these longer distances, because I know I can push my body. I know my body's capable of it. It's whether or not my mind gets in the way of what my body is telling me it's capable of doing in these longer distances. So I think there's a lot to be learned and a lot to be discovered. And these distances give you that time. That's not, you know, in a 50K, if I get five blisters, well, I can probably push through. But if I get five massive blisters and I'm 50K and I still have, you know, in my case, I still have 400 kilometers to run, that's a very different level of problem solving that has to happen. So I think, you know, I think people just need to walk into these understanding, like, it's okay to not know. And it's okay to, like, you know, investigate and learn and figure out what is the best way. And if it means your first 200, you don't finish, that's okay. As long as you walk away with something you learn from it.
That's great advice. So are you still working in emergency dispatch services?
I am calling myself medically retired. I'm going to go with medically retired. I'm working, transitioning out right now. And just medically, it's not something I can go back to that is going to serve me in any way or my family. And I had to, it was a tough decision because I think the parallel that I have with it, with running, is so many of us tie ourselves and our identities to what we do, whether it be the running world, whether it be our careers, especially in emergency services and, you know, service personnel, whether it be military, first responders, whatever that is. And we get so attached to that identity. And as soon as, you know, in my case, let's say if I can't go back to that job, as soon as that's gone, you feel like you have nothing. So perfect parallel would be you get injured and now you can't run. You quite literally, if that is all you define yourself as a runner, you quite literally feel like there is nothing to, like, not nothing to live for, but nothing to, like, attain for. So you know, you can fall into anxiety and depression and all these other things because you have nothing else. So really it's about not defining yourself by what you do and more about who you are as a person. Like, what are the values and the things and the reasons why you do these things? And if you haven't sat down and figured those out, like, sit down, write down the 3-4 things that are your values as to why you're doing this, and really have that, like, honest conversation with yourself. Like, am I doing it for the right reasons? And if I'm not, how can I change that so I can be?
Yeah, I think that's, it's really key to keep that dialogue open with yourself and be honest and to do it frequently. Like, cause my relationship with running definitely changes, like, throughout, you know, the months and years. And there's times where I wonder if it's, like, borderline addiction, unhealthy, and then other times where it seems really healthy and, like, you know, sustainable, and the ebb and flow of that. I think it's important to, like, keep your finger on the pulse and kind of, you know, at the very least, at a starting point, be aware, right? Like, and just honest with yourself.
Yeah, there's a quote from Anthony DeMello that says, what you're aware of, you are in control of. What you are not aware of is in control of you. So if you can maintain that, like, level of awareness, you can make the choices. But if you're not aware of it, it's just going to own you.
I really like that. That's a good quote. Who said it?
It's Anthony DeMello is the gentleman.
Awesome. Can you talk to us a little bit about what Bigger Than the Trail is and how, you know, how you're working with them? I know I've seen, you know, people post about Bigger Than the Trail, and I feel like I have a very high level awareness of what it is, but I'd love for you to dive in a bit and kind of tell us what that organization is.
Yeah, so Bigger Than the Trail has been around for about 5 years now, maybe a couple of years more than that. But what they do is they provide mental health supports to people within the endurance community who may not have access to that care themselves. And it's through a virtual online portal like a BetterHelp or a Calmary. So it's all virtual online care. So they're able to help people everywhere. So they cover all of North America. They've been working with people overseas as well, too. So they, it is a US-based charity. But it's nice that they can provide those supports to other people. So the idea is any money that they raise, basically you can put your email in if you need support, if you're looking for therapy, you're looking for mental health care, you put your email in, you'll get an email back saying you've been given a certain like access to sessions. You go and put your, you know, information in and register on one of these sites and your coverage gets paid for. You can get it extended. So they've really opened the doors for people who may not feel that they are allowed to have access, or maybe they don't have it through their extended healthcare. I mean, I live in Canada, so a little bit different for us. Like we do have, you know, a little bit better access to things, but it still doesn't mean, you know, everybody has access to that. So I got joined in with them last year, obviously going through my experiences and my mental health struggles. I wanted to work with an organization that was tied to running and mental health, to be able to give back through my experiences and understanding that, you know, I had access to that care because my injury was a workplace injury. And I understand that so many people don't. So, you know, everybody's trauma is valid. So to, you know, say that, oh, just because it wasn't a workplace injury doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to go and access help. So I've been raising money for them for the last 2 years through a few of my events, as well as just raising awareness through my social media as well. They're getting definitely bigger. They started out, I think, helping like 20 people the first year. And now I can't remember. I think it's like almost like $10,000 a month is what they're putting towards counseling for people. So it's pretty incredible what they're doing. And it's a volunteer run organization. So we're not sitting with a CEO at the top, you know, taking all the money. It's all the money that's raised is going directly to support people and the awareness for mental health.
That's really incredible. What is the, like, if someone is interested in seeking help and finding out more about them, like, what's the best place to start?
Yeah, the best would be their website. So it's just btt.run. Everything's on there. You just quite literally put your email in. And if, you know, there's no questions asked, there's not some big long form you have to fill out. And it's not just for runners in the endurance community as well. It could be family members that are attached to you. They don't discriminate between, you know, if you're not a runner, you can't have help. So they're really doing what they can. And I think it's, you know, it's only going to expand. And they are trying to offer peer support as well through, you know, a weekly group. I believe it's just on pause right now. But that's another avenue that I know a lot of people have received help, because some people don't need therapy and they just want, you know, a supportive group of people that they can openly talk to. So anybody within the Bigger Than the Trail community, if you see them posting, all of us are more than happy to, the number of people that I've had messages from that just wanted to have a quick chat, just because they know what I'm about and my experience. And, you know, cause it is the shared experience that people really gravitate towards, because if they know you've been through it, they know you can relate to them. I think that's like my superpower, is I have the ability to relate to so many people within the endurance community because of what I've experienced and what I've went through. Just because our traumas are not the same, it doesn't mean we're not feeling the same.
Well, that sounds like an incredible resource. I'm just thinking about, like, when you go to a doctor that's not familiar with running, if you're injured, you know, they're going to just say, stop running. They don't really understand it. So I can see how, you know, in mental health, there could be a parallel if they don't really understand the sport. So I think that tie-in between the mental health with the focus on endurance, I think that's just amazing. So maybe switching gears, Really want to hear about the Speed Project. So I'm from Los Angeles, and this is really the first year I've heard of this thing. So I'd love to know more about it. So yeah, can you just explain what it is and tell us how you came into running, especially coming from Canada when us locals don't even know what this is?
Yeah. So the Speed Project is what they consider an unsanctioned race. So there is no official start line. There is no official finish line in per se, and there is no official route. There's what they call the OG route, which began in, I don't want to get it wrong, but I believe it was 2013, that a group of six guys decided they wanted to run from LA to Vegas. They created a route. It was, you know, the OG team was usually comprised of four males and two females. It was what the kind of the consensus was for that initial group that did it. And it was quite literally just a group of friends that wanted to go out and do a run. They ended up doing this OG route out from LA through Adelanto, Victorville, Barstow, Baker, up Death Valley Road and around. So it was mostly road. At that time, that was the OG route, which was 340 miles. And over the years, they started bringing in relay teams. They decided this was something that, you know, they wanted to bring out to a larger group. So I started hearing about it back in about 2019, was when they decided, hey, like, I wonder if there's some like crazy people who actually want to run this solo. And sure enough, they were able to get a few people. The first one that I knew of it, and just for my connection as an ambassador with On, was David Kilgore. I'm not sure if you're familiar with David Kilgore, but he was one of the first ones to run it solo. So that was kind of my connection to it, just from being in the world with On during that time. And yeah, so it's evolved into, I think this year they had 77 relay teams, and we had 23 soloists. And that's worldwide. So it's quite the spectacle. Again, you start from Santa Monica Pier at 4 a.m. So the way they have it divided is the soloists start on the Monday. So on the Monday, and then the relay team start on the Friday. So the soloists, we all start, like I said, 4 a.m. And it's, you know, for people that don't know, it's like those choose your own adventure books as a kid. I quite literally was able to choose my entire route. The only rules that are attached to this is you're not allowed to run on the interstate and you're not allowed to commit any crimes. Other than that, like, no holds barred. You can stop at convenience stores. You can sleep where you want. You can, you know, as long as your runner is not, like, your RV is not trailing you on the major roads and things like that. But luckily, most of my intel actually came from last year's record holder, Lucy Scholes. So she was able to share most of her information with me, her GPX files, all that stuff. And I was able to kind of look at it and decide what I wanted to do with the route. This route was very different than the OG route. We can get more into the route. I'm sure there's probably some more questions from all that information.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, one of the reasons you like this sport and the reason you keep going up in distance is because you're a problem solver. Similar, the reason I love these 200s is because they're these big puzzles where there's so many variables. And this sounds like, you know, if a 200's a 1,000-piece puzzle, this is a 1,500-piece puzzle, right? Like, before we get into your training and, like, the actual event itself, like, how do you begin logistically? Tell us about your route, how you chose it, what changes you made to, you know, make it suit you. And I mean, I guess to kick us off, how far was it?
Yeah, so total distance on my route was 464 kilometers. So I was able to shave about, because 300 miles, I think it's 482. So yeah, I was able to shave a little bit off of the 300 miles. And then because you don't go up Death Valley Road north of Baker, because I was able to actually cut across through the desert on what's called power line, which is, you can't use the RV. We had to actually have a Jeep Rubicon. Luckily, my good friend James offered to come out, who was actually a 4x4 backcountry guy up in Canada here. So I had the perfect team for it, which we can go more into, you know, obviously crew and stuff after. But as for the route itself, it was more about trying to, for me, I wanted to maximize the amount of possible trail or gravel that I could be on, because I know that's where I could excel, coming from, you know, a mountain ultra background. I have been training on the roads a lot, obviously, because it was cold in Canada and I had no choice with the way the winter is here. So training for a March race in Canada in the heat is really difficult. You have to, we can get more into the training aspect of it as well too, but the actual route itself is basically worked out to be about half and half between road and like gravelly power line, sandy, silty trail, essentially. So I basically from pretty much just outside of Barstow Northeast, I basically went not quite Death Valley, but there's a power line, that just two giant power line towers that run forever. Like, the vastness is absolutely insane. And that's probably the biggest difference that I found with this race more than anything is I'm used to mountain ultras where you don't know where you are. You're in the forest and you just go until you get to the top and then you're at the top. Whereas this, you could quite literally see from horizon to horizon. And you just saw this straight power line road with just power lines running down it. And you just went until you got to the horizon. Like it was that like vast. So I pretty much followed what Lucy's route was last year. There was a couple of variations, just with some errors that she made last year that she had mentioned to me on her route. And I really wanted to do all the power line. I knew there was other ways to do it, which would mean more road, but I wanted to like experience true desert in the middle of nowhere running.
That sounds incredible. What were some of the things you did to physically prepare for this?
Yeah, so not very many people, well, some people know. So I actually had a knee injury coming out of Divide 200 that I managed for most of the season as well. I had some calcification on my patellar tendon that just after long runs, I would sit and it would just burn. I couldn't get it to go away. I rested for 2 months after Divide, couldn't get anything to settle. And then I ended up going to a sports med doc and I ended up going getting a PRP injection, which is a plasma replacement therapy. And that meant that was middle of December that, and I hadn't been running at all up until that point. I tried again, couldn't work. And then I basically had to sit for 2 weeks. So that was basically January 1st. And then I could slowly start adding mileage. So up until middle of January, I had 0 kilometers on my legs at all. So my coach and I, his name's Ray Zahab. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him at all, but he's done these desert crossings through Death Valley, Atacama, all these other things. And he just said, get the injection. You have the legs. We will get you trained. We will get you there. And I have had the fastest build I've had out of any race that I've ever done. I don't recommend it for people who are coming new to the sport, but I knew what I had in my legs and what I was capable of doing. So we pretty much were adding 10 to 15% on every single week. Like it started out at like 50K a week, 60, 70, 80, 90. And up until the kind of 3 weeks before, I was doing like back-to-back 50Ks on Saturdays and Sundays. So we pretty much built right into the race because of how short I basically had a 2 month block of building to be able to get my body to be able to run 464 kilometers. So there was no taper, there was no downtime, which again, I don't recommend. I know I don't want to be out here saying that, you should go hard for 2 months and you go do this, cause I don't recommend it. But it worked for me and I kudos to my coach for just understanding, me listening to my body and understanding, back to back 50Ks is not ideal a week before a race. And then on one weekend it was minus 30 out in Canada here. So it was freezing and I ended up going and doing like a track workout morning and night for like 80K on the track inside, like just 200 meter loops on and off. So it's like mentally, those are the things that I think that can carry you through these things. Like people, scoff at the treadmill, scoff at the track and all these things. And I'm like, if you can do those things mentally, when you're actually out in nature and you get to experience all the, scenery and everything, you're going to think back and be like, I am so glad I am not on the track now. That's kind of the preparation for me building into it. It was a build right into the race, to be honest.
Nice. Yeah. I feel the same way about like tracks and treadmills. I think they're great tools and I understand complaining about them, but I don't understand shying away from them. I think you should lean into them and use them. Can you compare like the actual running experience to say the Divide 200 or 100 milers, like, is the pace faster because the terrain is a little more easy to get in sync on? Like how did you find it when compared to more traditional like trail ultras, just from like moving through it, crewing, fueling, like the whole kind of experience, like what did it feel similar or did this feel like a total, was it like comparing apples to oranges?
It was completely different. There's no race that I've done that compares to this in any way other than the only thing I can compare it to is the backyard ultras that I've done in the sense of you know that you're going to be back with your crew all the time. it just so happens that that crew is moving with you the whole time. So it's very, like, that would be the only kind of comparison that I would have with it, is all my gear, all my stuff was with me all the time, except when we had to switch it over to the Jeep. It was still with me, but we had to kind of pare it down a little bit and just only bring the necessities. So it's not, you know, I didn't have a bed to sleep in. I could sleep in a Jeep if I wanted to for 20 minutes. So that would be the only comparison I would give it, is very similar to the Backyard Ultras, but it's like the tent is moving with you. And, you know, having the right crew and the right people with you for something like this is like probably 3/4 of the puzzle, because the amount of logistics and everything, like my route itself, I don't know if you guys have seen that. There's a website called ultrapacer.com. Have you guys come across that website yet? So take a look at that website. It's a guy who started a couple of years ago. It's in beta form right now, but it basically builds your entire plan for you. You put in the GPX file. You can say, I want to be there in 72 hours. It'll have all the elevation changes. You can put in your percentages for difference. So I built basically like 3 different plans of, here's my kind of rough goal times. And it just pumped everything out. No spreadsheets, no anything. Like, you can export it. It's an amazing program. If you guys haven't checked it out, to definitely look at it. But I use that, and I split it up into about, I think we had 29 different legs is what we had split it up into. The longest ones being about 20K, the shortest being about kind of 5 to 10K. And then whenever we were on the power line section with the Jeep would drive up a mile ahead. I was just running completely light. I had my vest off. I was running with a flask in the heat. I had an ice bandana on, and just, you know, the Jeep would get there. I would swap out water. They would ask if I need anything else. I'd say nope. And then they'd drive a mile ahead. So different compared to, can you imagine on a mountain ultra where a quad is just like driving up ahead a mile ahead of you? It's like, oh, perfect. Like, I can swap my water bottle out and I don't have to wear all of this, like, you know, extra gear for 50 pounds, you know, 10 pounds on my back. Right. So completely different, nothing like it. Yeah. And it was weird how much it fed into like my, again, that problem solving aspect for me, and how much I absolutely like just loved the format, because I got to choose it. It wasn't forced on me. It wasn't like, you must go up this hill. I'm like, if I don't want to go up that hill, I can go to the right. Like, I don't have to go up that hill.
Wild. So can you talk a little bit more about the crewing just overall? Like, how many people? You talked about RV, you've talked about Jeep. Like, for the whole duration, how'd you break it up? Was it like that Badwater style the whole time? Or, get into it.
For sure. Yeah, so we basically had, my crew chief, my fiance, who is an absolute logistical machine, she is the one that kept us all in sync. I had two of my friends who were also Dubai 200 finishers as pacers. And then I had one of my best friends that I've worked with for the last 20 years as my chauffeur / RV driver / masseuse, Leo. So Stuart and Lance were my two pacers from Dubai. And then, so we had the RV for the first day because we knew we were going to be basically on road. And I was splitting the legs up in like to, you know, 15-kilometer increments while we were on the road, because that felt good. I could settle in, got to the RV. It just felt like a really good distance for me. And then when we hit the power line sections where the RV couldn't go because it would sink, they had to basically drive around. That's when my buddy James ended up picking up a Jeep in Vegas, drove, met us, and then he basically followed us in the Jeep. The RV basically drove ahead to the next possible spot that they could actually get to, which would have been at the most like 25K for me. I think that was the longest section, was about 25K, where I only had the Jeep for that first initial part. And then once we got out of there, we got out of Barstow. The RV could only go so far when we ended up basically north of the I-15, just outside of Barstow there. And that's when the RV basically had to drive ahead till they got to Baker and Death Valley Road. So it was basically a 46-mile section with just the Jeep. And then Death Valley Road, got to sleep in the RV for a brief period of time. And then another 50-mile section of Powerline Road again with just the Jeep. So there was large sections like that where the RV couldn't go. So they just drove ahead, drove to the prim in the next spot, and just basically waited. So logistically, that was how we kind of worked our way around everything. We just, obviously the pacers, one was sleeping while one was eating and one was running. And, you know, both of them combined ended up running, I'm going to have to get them buckles, those guys. But yeah, they both ended up running over 100 miles each, both of those two guys. And then the Jeep driver, my buddy James, ended up running a few as well too. And he got sick on the route, but man, that guy, he ran an entire marathon on no calories because he was sick and he was still running. So there was a lot of learnings and a lot of things that we had to overcome in order to make this happen. And there was no complaining, no anything. Like my fiance's rule for all the pacers is when you're on the trail, you're not allowed to complain to Evan. When you're back with me, you can bitch all you want. You complain all you want. But when you're on the trail and you're pacing, like nothing else matters. Like your pain doesn't matter, unfortunately, like you're here for him, which is kind of a hard line, but I appreciate it. So.
Yeah, that's great. You should get them buckles. Peter got me a buckle for, I paced 75 miles at the U-Ray 100 and like over 30 hours of pacing. And he got me a buckle for that. So it's nice. a fun pacer crew gift. And that sounds like a deserving party.
Yes. Yes.
So two quick questions, kind of like, I just want to like benchmark this against sort of things that I've done. So questions that people always ask is, you know, how long did it take you and how much did you sleep?
Yeah. So 94 hours and 48 minutes. And I slept for 5.5 hours the entire time.
Awesome. So yeah, very like not unheard of to hear those numbers in other 200s, both of those, like, so wildly different events, but like similar, you know, completion metrics.
Like I was aiming for 100 miles a day was what my initial kind of first goal was. And I was fairly close on day one. I think I got, I was just shy of like by like 15 or so kilometers, but it was just, I think, you know, in the 200 realm, the sleep aspect, I've tried a couple things obviously between Divide and this, and there's a couple of people that tried something slightly different. And I think I'm probably going to institute it myself is condensing the sleep a little bit more. So run 100 miles, sleep for a solid 6 hours, even though in the back of your mind, you're like, people are passing me. I'm never going to catch up. But then understanding that you're going to be refreshed now. And if you've trained your body to run on those back-to-back big days, like I have been, is that going to be more beneficial? Can I actually go longer, further, faster, rather than like, you know, walking dead, sleep deprived, trying to like keep pushing through and only sleeping for 1.5 to 2 hours at a time. So I think I want to, you know, encourage people to maybe try that, because I think for me, I saw one of the other guys do it, and he's one of the guys, he's running around the US right now, circumnavigating it. And this was part of it. He slept for 6 hours and that guy was an absolute machine. He just did another 100 miles the next day. Like, it was incredible to watch.
So I want to talk about fueling a little bit for this, because it seems like, I mean, if my quick math is correct based on the time and the distance, the pace is a little quicker than what you'd see at you know, most kind of trail mountain 200s. Was your nutrition significantly different from Divide? And, you know, obviously you had more access to nutrition because you saw the crew more frequently. So were you eating, you know, gels and chews and typical race food, more kind of real food, or a mix of both? Like, what did that look like and how did that play out for you over the course of the 94 hours?
Yeah. So I always use electrolytes in my bottles. I'm an Exact Nutrition athlete. So I use their electro tabs in all my bottles whenever I'm running. The concentration works really well for me because I am a salty sweater. So all my bottles typically have an electrolyte in them. I know some people, you know, can have too many electrolytes. I've never had that issue with any of my races. So I slam the electrolytes all the time and it usually benefits me, especially in the heat. And then they also have some fruit bars that I ended up using fairly regularly. But if I'm on the trail, that's usually what I had on me. Every about 45 minutes, I was having one of those. And those sustained me for that. Some of them have caffeine, some don't. And then definitely real food. Anytime I got to the RV, I mean, I've become famous for my stuffing balls. I don't know, like a box of stuffing is 100 grams of carbs. So if I split it up into three, it's 33 grams of carbs for three, like little, and they're super easy to eat. They're like palatable. You don't have to chew very much. And so I know people have been amazed by those things. Eggs, for some reason, eggs, bananas, pizza. I do find sometimes for me, it's really hard to like decide to want to chew. And my crew and I debriefed all this as well too. And just understanding that there's a difference between when you're in these ultras and these things of, like, I may have a preference, but preference goes out the window when you're racing. Like you can't have a preference. It's like calories need to go in. I don't care that you don't like the taste right now. This is what I've prepared for you. You need to eat it. And I think that, you know, that's kind of one of my new things that I need to really get on board with is preference doesn't matter if you're racing. You can't be picky, especially if you're, you know, you don't have crew and you're an aid station, right? You need to be adaptable to other things too. So but yeah, the chewing factor for me is really tough. So it has to be things that are not a lot of chewing is the best way to explain it.
The similarity sometimes between toddlers and ultra runners is, I don't know if it's funny or sad.
Very, yeah, completely agree. Yeah, I was definitely acting like a baby sometimes.
Yeah, I think you're right though. It's funny to think about, but like the texture of food really matters when you're going this far. It's even simple things like a quesadilla where the cheese isn't all melted is horrible. Like a hamburger with dry buns is that. So I think when you have your own crew that can take a little extra time to really cook the food well, you know, can make a big difference if they really know what they're doing.
Perfect example is I had a burger patty on Powerline in the Jeep. It was super hot out and they had been wrapped up in tinfoil up against the cooler. So they were super cold. They took it out. They gave it to me. I took one bite. I opened the Jeep door. I spit it out. I was like, no, like absolutely not. This is not, that is disgusting. But again, you have to be willing to at least try to get the calories in. And not just say no. My crew definitely beat me up for that one a few times. And even after, I'm like, okay, no more preference. Like, just eat the calories that are in front of you. Don't think about it because, again, if you can get out of your head and just think about this as like, this is just calories. This isn't food right now. This is quite literally like survival. If I'm going to be out in 30 degree heat for another 4 hours, I need to eat this or I'm not going to be able to do it.
So apart from food, what were some of the other big challenges that you faced along the way or really intense moments and how'd you work through those and problem solve?
Yeah, so I had a little bit of a calf Achilles soleus issue that cropped up about, it would have been day two, about 170 kilometers in, so just over the 100-mile mark. I ended up, was running, and all of a sudden I felt a very sharp, like, stabbing pain in the back of my, like, just above my Achilles, just below my calf. And I had to stop. It was like almost like somebody like stabbing me with a piece of glass. And I was like, oh, what was that? I stopped, walked it out for like a good 30 seconds. I was like, okay, like, I don't know what that was, but it hurt really briefly. I started walking, felt okay. And then felt okay, got to the RV after about 10K. Noticed there was like a little bit of a bulge, very minor, just behind that spot that I felt. So we called my coach and kind of chatted about our options, whether, you know, what we could do to try to see if it was, you know, something major. We ended up KT taping that section just to put a little bit of tension on it to give it a little bit of relief. And thankfully, that actually got me through. I left that KT tape on for the entire time, whether it was like up here that it was helping me or whether it was helping me, I don't know. But I currently have the fattest foot ever still. So there's definitely still some damage and some draining and I got some doctor appointments to make and things to figure out, but it got me through the race. So for what that's worth, you never know in those situations if it's good or bad, but I was able to still keep moving and didn't have any pain for the first time. I can't even think about any other races where I actually had to take any pain medication because I couldn't put anything topical over the KT tape. Just in case it started lifting it. So that was definitely a tough moment for me and my crew. Just, you know, looking at each other, like we're only like 100 miles in, like, and you're not even on the trail section yet. Like you've only been running on the road. So that was a tough one, just to kind of work through and figure out like, is this going to hold and what else can we do? But luckily my coach, again, having access to my coach and just giving him a call and just saying, here's where we're at. And, you know, if the KT tape holds, then perfect. Keep going. If you don't have pain. So.
Yeah. One thing that always kind of blows my mind in these races is like, you know, a problem presents itself and, you know, common sense would say that we're going to keep applying the stimulus that caused this problem. So it's going to either stay the same or get worse. There's no way it's going to resolve or get better. That's just like, I can't wrap my head around another scenario in that case. But time and time again, it doesn't. It gets better, or it goes away, or a different problem pops up that overshadows it. And it's just, it's so hard to, like, you know, admit that as a possibility when you're in the pain cave and when you're, you know, struggling with something in real time. So I really try to keep that front of mind. Like, just because it's bad now doesn't mean it's going to get worse, even if I continue doing what I'm doing. So it's cool to see, hear that you had that at mile 100 of nearly 300 miles and were able to problem solve and move through it. What, you know, we talked about your route and kind of like this choose your own adventure style. How much of it, if any, changed throughout? Like, did you do the route that you set out in Santa Monica to do, or were there alterations along the way?
There was a couple minor alterations, but it was more when we had the map in front of us and we're like, we see a shortcut. We don't know if that's going to like be a big deal, but that might shave off like half a mile. So, you know, we look at our maps and everything, because I had all the maps downloaded offline on my Gaia maps. And we just kind of made a collective decision between the group. We're like, okay, we're going to try it. Like, if we have to turn around, we'll turn around, but we're just going to go for it. So there was a couple sections like that that worked out really well. And I mean, that's the thing with these races, like, you know, like running in general is like 1,000 yes or no questions all the time. It's like, do I take this way? No. Or do I take this way? Yes. Should I eat this? Should I, like, it's just, you're constantly being bombarded with all those things, and having the right crew around you, especially with these route changes, like those two route changes that we made, it wasn't me looking at my map. Like, I can't be trusted with my brain after 100 miles. Like, I'm definitely not going to be like humming and hawing with them, being like, no, I think we should go this way. I'm just going to go, crew, okay, you know, you guys looked at the map. I have full faith in that we're going to go in the right direction. And if we're not, whatever, we'll figure it out. But it's really like relinquishing that control aspect, which I have a very hard time doing. Talk to my fiance, she'll tell you. It's very tough for me in these moments, because I love the planning. I love all that stuff as well too, which means I should probably go cruise some people. But it's really hard to relinquish that control. And once you do, especially with people you trust, like, it's massive. If you can get to that point, things can just start to run like clockwork, because you've put the people in those places that have the experience, that have the knowledge, that understand what you're going after. So just trust them. I think that's a big piece of it too, is that trust aspect with your crew.
So what are some of the key takeaways from the Speed Project, and how are you going to take those and apply them to future races like the Divide?
Yeah. If you asked my crew, the number of times that I asked for one more minute in aid stations, I don't even want to fathom how much I lost in time by asking for one more minute in the aid stations. And because it was choose your own adventure, and because we saw them more frequently, it again gave me more chances to take breaks. No different than like these mountain ultras, you may not see your crew for 65 kilometers. Well, there's no like stopping and asking for one more minute. Like, you just keep moving forward. So that's definitely one big takeaway for me, is one more minute needs to go out the door. And, you know, just understand, you know, take your breaks while you're on the trail or when you're on the route, and just understand, like, just really try to keep to your aid station times. And if you don't need it, don't take it. The other one, I get really cold at night. So sitting down in the evening, even between the legs, even if I was fully bundled up with pants, legs, everything, my knees started getting really stiff. So I'm going to really just try to, you know, stay standing even for the breaks, even if I feel like I need a rest, just to stay mobile. Because once you get going again, you're fine. But if you've been sitting for too long, it takes me, you know, 1 to 2 kilometers to get going again. So again, that's slowing down the pace. And then I think the other big one that kind of, I've actually wrote in my phone incoherently at like 250 miles because I wanted to remember it, is it's so easy to focus on the 100% that's left rather than the 90% that you've already done. So, you know, if I say I have 60 more kilometers to go, like, fuck, I got 60 more kilometers to go. Like, this is horrendous. Like, my legs are done. My stomach hurts. You know, I'm tired. I haven't slept since, you know, yesterday. But then you don't actually realize, like, okay, but you've just ran 400 kilometers. Like, it's so easy to stay focused on, like, everything you have left to do rather than going, like, man, like, you've already jammed out, like, 400 kilometers. You're doing amazing. Like, just take it bite by bite, take it by kilometer by kilometer. You don't need to think about this as like 100% of everything. It's actually only 10% of what you've already done that's left. That's it. It's not 100%. So it's just really breaking down those percentages and just like putting it really into like raw perspective of where you've actually come from as opposed to what you have left.
That's a really, really great perspective shift that it's pretty cool that you made that like in the moment and actually wrote it down, because it seems like the kind of thing that would be really easy to focus on like in retrospect, you know, sitting in a comfy mm-hmm. chair and thinking about the adventure. But to actually have that shift during the race must have been a pretty cool experience.
Yeah. And that was when my fiance, she swore she wasn't going to come out and actually pace me for any of the sections. And I was on the second night on Powerline, and she could just see that I was tired and I was fading, and I was just like getting a little bit down on myself and just getting frustrated. Like, oh man, like I should be moving faster. And she bundled up. I didn't know she was doing it. Got to the Jeep and she's like, let's go. That was like 16 kilometers, 10 miles of pep, like full on like pep talk. Like, you got this, you know what you're doing. Like, you've already come this far. So if I was going to credit anybody to like why I thought that in those moments, it's because she, like unbeknownst to her, like jumped in and paced me, even though like we were like, it was definitely a little bit of, you know, power hiking and a little bit of climbing and stuff. But I mean, at that point, you're not moving very fast anyways. And, you know, for her to come out and even want to do something like that to support me is huge. So it's, you know, you really realize who your crew is when they step up to do those things.
So if someone, you know, to the extent that you can speak to it, like if someone's interested in running the Speed Project solo or relay, like I know it's an unsanctioned event. Is it something that you can just sign up for, or like, what does the process look like to learn more about the Speed Project and potentially get involved if that's something that you're interested in?
For sure. Yeah. So it's, I wouldn't say it's as secretive as Barclays, but there's definitely an aspect to it of, you know, if you are somebody that has already been a part of it, you typically understand like how to get access to the registration form. So registering doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get in. It just means that you have an opportunity based on what they're really looking for is people who have a story and a story that they can amplify on a greater scale to really kind of build the community the way that it's been built. And it's really like, it's probably the most unique, eclectic group of runners and people that I've ever been around. You know, I say like trail runners and trail community and 200 mile plus athletes are, you know, a different breed. The way I would describe the Speed Project culture is very much like 70s surf culture, where it's very, you know, everybody is there just to like chill, have fun, experience it all together, like be there as a giant group. And not worry about life in general during it, because honestly, I felt like I was on another planet for the last week. It was just like, and I've never had that feeling from another race where I quite literally like shut down everything. I didn't think anything else existed around me. If somebody's interested in trying to get into the Speed Project, the way that I kind of worked my way through it is I had a couple of connections with people that had previous solo runners that had run it. And then in connecting with them, then you find who the person is who organizes the event. And then you can ask for the application for it. And some of the questions on the application are questions that I've never had been asked before in any race application. And it's really just trying to understand like who you are as a person and what can you bring to this community that isn't already here. It's just a unique group of people that, you know, I've made lifelong friends over this last week with the individuals that I've met and the solos that I ran with, and all the crews are like happy to help one another out. There's no hiding information. Everybody's very open about here's my route, here's my information. So my suggestion is if you want to find somebody that's ran it solo, talk to relay teams. They do make a selection based on the people that apply. So I don't know what they don't really talk about their selection criteria. But it's really more about like what really focus on what you can bring to a community like that and what it is that you are wanting from this experience. That's really what it was for me. And, you know, curiosity is going to go a long way, I think.
So maybe one more question before we wrap up and get to our quick five. But just what's up next for you?
Yeah, next we're going to figure out this leg and hope that it's just like a strain or something. We'll wait till the swelling goes down so I can actually define my ankle from my calf. And so it'll be BC Backyard Ultra is at the end of April. So I've done that for the last couple of years. I did 24 and 30 hours the last couple of years. So I'm confident that I can go much further than that with all the knowledge and stuff I have now with that route. And then after that is Tahoe 200 and Divide 200 this year. So I'm just putting the distance in for fun this year, just slamming it all in. So by the end, I'm sure I'm going to be probably like 4 or 5 200 mile plus distances over this year. So
it's a slippery slope.
yes, it's definitely.
Hope to see you out there at Tahoe 200. My wife's running her first 200 there this year, and I'll be all over the course. So I'll keep an eye out for you.
Yeah, sounds great.
So we end our episodes with sort of a quick 5 questions. So pretty much just whatever comes, you know, top of mind, doesn't have to be perfect. I'll kick us off here. What's been your highest high in a 200? So we can consider the Divide or the Speed Project.
I would say Speed Project. The sunrise on Powerline, just seeing horizon to horizon and just seeing this like just vastness, and you're just like, I am quite literally in the middle of nowhere. I'm with like two other humans and I can't see anything. Like, it's just like, it just feels like it will just go forever. Like the earth is just like endless.
All right. What about your lowest low in a 200?
I would say that leg situation was definitely because what I came in wanting to do and the unknown of what that pain was. It's very rare that I've had, you know, knock on wood, I haven't had any major injuries on any of my ultras, some minor things here and there. But this is the first time that I actually went like, uh-oh, like that's not normal. So that's probably been the lowest, like mentally and physically, just understanding like this could be the end or this is going to be something we can manage.
What about, and maybe it's the stuffing balls, but favorite food for a 200, if you can only eat one thing for the whole race?
Yeah, stuffing balls. Like I don't know what it is. Like cold, hot, warm, like whatever. I stick them in the vest, and yeah, they're amazing.
Favorite piece of gear for a 200?
I would have to say for a mountain 200, I would say poles. I love my Lucky poles. I think they're, you know, you can save your legs so much as long as you know how to use them efficiently. That's the key. Make sure you know how to use them before you've used them the first time. I would say for any normal 200 poles, without a doubt. I thought I was going to use them on this one, and I just, with the amount of elevation, I just decided that it wasn't worth the extra weight because I was going to be with the crew most of the time. So, and just being able to have access to be able to eat and drink, and I was running with a handheld, so it just didn't make sense. But poles definitely for me.
And last question that we all know the answer to this one, but it's the theme of this podcast. Evan, have you found your distance to empty yet?
I am way too curious to have found my distance to empty yet. But I'm just so curious of how much further I can go, especially after doing Speed Project, and how good I felt even with the leg issue going in at the end. And, you know, the last 2K, I was like, clocking like a 4:30 kilometer. Like I know I haven't found my distance to empty, and I'm too stubborn and too curious to figure out how much further I can go.
Love it. Where can listeners follow you? Where can they keep an eye out for that documentary that's coming out? What's the best way to reach you?
Yeah, so the best way is either my website, ultrabirch.com, or Instagram at ultrabirch. Those are kind of the two best. So there's that documentary. And then I had a film crew with me for this entire Speed Project as well. But I'll just tease with that. And there'll be something else coming probably late to end of the year, early next year about the experience with that too. So
awesome. Maybe we'll have to have you back on to talk about the other 200s you've done and kind of highlight that documentary once it comes out. Cause that's, I bet that's going to be really cool. Well, thanks for joining us. That was a fun chat.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. And I just wanted to be remiss if I didn't show everybody. So the buckles that you get from 200s. So this is the basically finisher medal for soloists. So it's basically like recycled dice and poker chips for the soloists. So that's the that's what you get from the Speed Project if you're a soloist. So
that's super cool. Love it. So the Speed Project, what'd you think about that, Peter?
Well, knew nothing about it going into this conversation, and suddenly I'm pretty interested, and especially just really not even caring about time, not trying to win it or anything, but just stringing together like the craziest route that no one's ever done, going as over as many mountains as I can to try to go from LA to Vegas. So who knows? But as of this moment, I'm pretty interested in it.
All right. I'll crew you if you want to do it.
Sounds good. What about you? Any interest?
I'm not interested, but I wouldn't say that I'm super interested. I'd probably want to crew it first. It's definitely it's a super cool concept. I feel like it's kind of like Nolan's 14, that route out here in Colorado. I'm sure you've heard of. Like, I'd love to do it, but I just don't know if I want to do the like logistics work up front. Like, I'd like to like join someone else who's doing it and just be like tag along for like the physical like exertion part of it, not the planning and the paperwork.
Yeah, that's fair. The planning that goes into this stuff is often overlooked and the hardest part.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, kudos to Evan. That sounded absolutely epic. And, you know, the fact that he's raising awareness for mental health and, you know, creating a cool documentary out of this whole thing. It sounded like a really cool experience and it was really fun chatting with him.
Agreed.
Should we get into some categories?
Yeah, let's do it. I can kick us off with performance of the week. So this week, we're going to give it to Michael Kars. So he is training for Cocodona. It's just a few weeks out at this point, and he put in a great performance at the Antelope Island 50 miler where he won his age group, that 50 to 59 age group. So kudos, Michael, and good luck in Cocodona.
Yeah, that's awesome. Nice work, Michael.
All right, what do we got next?
Let's do our snack review. So today we tried some Galaxy chocolate hazelnut eggs. They are from the UK. I believe they're about 60 calories a pop, so could be like a good thing to snack on in a run if you're trying to like sort of microdose calories. But as delicious as they were, I don't think they're great for a running snack. I mean, they're pretty much all chocolate, would melt pretty easily and weren't the easiest thing to like chew if you were running, but yeah, to each their own, I guess. What'd you think?
Yeah, agreed. My immediate take is that this is something I would find in like an Easter basket. And yeah, it's just rich chocolate hazelnut. So yeah, good snack, goes great with my coffee, but there's no way I could eat this on a run.
Yeah, there's some good looking like run worthy snacks in this bag though. I'm excited to get into some of them. It's really hard not to eat the whole thing like up front and wait for these episodes.
I know you can do it.
Thanks. All right, should we play Let's Get Deep?
I think it's time. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's Get Deep is a card game for couples. Peter and I played on the podcast for your enjoyment and entertainment. There are three categories: icebreaker, deep, and deeper. Let's kick it off with Peter's icebreaker. Don't think too much about this. First thing that comes to mind, if you were a wrestler, what would your entrance theme song be?
How about Baby Got Back? I don't know why that popped into my head, but that's what we're doing.
There you go. I love it.
All right, icebreaker for you. What was your favorite story or book growing up?
Harold and the Purple Crayon. I don't even know what it is. I just know it was my favorite. I was obsessed with it. I'm going to have to like go Google it.
All right.
All right. Deep for you. List three things you currently feel lucky to have in your life. And you can't say your 3D printer.
That's about what I was about to say. Three things. I feel like I'm lucky to be able to go on family trips. I feel like, yeah, I just came back from one for spring break. So love that. I love that I'm able to run again. I think, you know, running is good for my mental health. And I always spiral out of control when I can't. So I'm happy to be running again. And third thing, I guess, happy to have my dog. I'm really into my, never had a dog as an adult till now, and have a puppy that it's a lot of fun to have around. So last is my dog.
Otto the Labradoodle.
Well, triple doodle.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
All right. Deep for you. Between us, who is more type A?
My initial reaction was going to be me. Like I was going to say me for sure. But then I think about your like triathlon background and like your infatuation with your watch and like numbers and stuff. So I don't know. I almost feel like personality wise, it's me, but like in the details, it's you, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Or maybe that's just because I'm a nerd at heart and can't help it.
But I guess, you know, if I had to, I'd probably say me just from a personality perspective. Like I'm very like, I don't know. I feel a little more type A.
Yeah, more outgoing.
Yeah. Not that you're not perfect, Peter. All right. What is the most spontaneous thing you've ever done? Is your deeper?
Oh, that's pretty easy. I think that's last year when there was a whole crew planning to go to Hurt, and I had already burned sort of a bunch of trips already, so I didn't think I had any chance of going. So we raced Avalon on a Saturday. My wife was there, and somehow you convinced my wife that I should go to Hurt, which was the next weekend. So yeah, bought plane tickets Sunday morning. I think we left like Wednesday or something and ended up on this magical trip to Hawaii. And it was super fun. Just spent the week going through all the routes on all trails and just having a blast.
Yeah, that was a great trip.
All right. Deeper for you. When was the last time you cried?
Huh, it might have been Cocodona last year. I'm trying to think if I cried since then. You know, I had a death in the family in May shortly after Cocodona that I think I did cry from. So probably twice in May last year. And I can't recall any times outside of that. I'm trying to think of other races or anything I did that might have caused it. Yeah, I think twice in May, one from a death in the family and one from the silliest thing at Cocodona. I was up on the Coconino Plateau between Schnebley Hill and Munns Park. And I just like, I wasn't even, my goals weren't even out of reach, but I was just like told myself that it was like over and I couldn't do it. And yeah. I think I might have called you, or you called me at the time, and I was like, I had just like, I was like on the tail end of my cry.
Yeah, I remember that. I was coming into Sedona, I think, and yeah, called you and caught the tail end of that. You had your one last sniffle. Yeah. You were okay.
Yeah, yeah. I hope I get to cry again here in a few weeks.
Yeah. Well, once again, normalizing crying in 200s on this podcast.
We got it. We got to get Gabe Peterson to cry in a race. Next time we crew or pace him, we have to like have like cue cards of things that might make him cry.
I love it. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. If you haven't already, please leave us a review. We actually, Peter, we got our first negative review from our episode last week.
That's pretty exciting. This is a milestone sponsorship, and we're getting negative reviews.
I feel like that. If that doesn't mean we've made it, then what does? Yeah, it was a review on Spotify from our episode with Rachel and Women in Ultra Running. And apparently seeking out equity in lotteries and ultra running for women is too woke, and that lost us a listener. So we're fine with that listener not listening anymore. But please leave us a review, preferably a positive one, if you're liking what we're doing. It takes just a couple of seconds, and we really do appreciate reading them. You can do that on Apple or Spotify. Yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week. We got some real Cocodona centric episodes coming up here in the few short weeks remaining between now and the race.
Awesome.